You're listening to the Book Club at 91.7 here on WVXU and WMUB. Good morning. I'm Mark Purcell. In the studio with me this morning is author Ronnie Salerno, who has quite an eye to catch the past, but not in ways you might be used to. He has a fantastic new history of Cincinnati discovered through its fading ads. His book, published by Arcadia and the History Press, is called Fading Ads of Cincinnati. Ronnie Salerno, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, I know through my colleague Bill Reinhart that these are frequently called ghost ads, but talk about these fading ads and where your fascination with these works of art began.
Yeah, so they're often called ghost signs. The publisher likes to call them fading advertisements. I guess it's probably the more technical term for them, because in a way they're still alive. They're just kind of, you know, slowly wearing away. But I run a history website about Cincinnati since 2007 called queencitydiscovery.com. And I kind of thought about doing a few posts on these or doing an article about them and just never got around to it. Didn't think there was going to be enough content to even justify an article. And then the publisher does these books in several cities across the United States. They reached out to me and said, you know, take a weekend, go out and see what you can find, try to shoot some, and found a ton of them. Actually ended up talking to Bill, who's been documenting them for a long time as well, and just kind of started rolling from there and found out, you know, there's hundreds of them around.
So tell everybody what a ghost sign actually is. I know everyone's seen one somewhere.
Gotcha, yeah. So a ghost sign would be a hand-painted advertisement, usually hand-painted on the side of a building. Kind of in the days before billboards were everywhere, people would use their building space. They'd rent it out to, if it had good visibility, that's where they would have, essentially use it as advertising space. So a lot of these ads, they advertise products that aren't around anymore or companies that aren't around anymore. And no one's just ever thought to paint over them or remove them because, you know, why spend the money if you can just leave it there? So they've kind of become like urban folk art. So as you walk around downtown, like on 4th Street, there's one for Provident Camera, which is a shop that closed up a few years ago. But on the top of the building still has a big old Nikon camera painted on it, still hanging up there. And, you know, the sign is at the will of the elements, so they kind of fade away, they get chipped away a little bit, but they definitely have some age and wear and tear to them.
So this was, let's go back to the history of this advertising. This is kind of at the beginning before billboards, correct?
Correct, yeah. Essentially before there was highways. There's not a whole lot of incentive to advertise with billboards. Everybody's kind of in the city. They're in more condensed places. So if you had a building that had a prominent, essentially prominent view to it, kind of above everything else, you could rent out that wall space, have someone paint on the side of it, and then there you go. You've got your own billboard built into the side of it.
So what is the time period on a lot of these, a lot of the pictures of the advertising you show in your book, Fading Ads of Cincinnati?
I'd say the vast majority kind of go from either about the 1930s right up until about the 1950s or 60s. A little bit in there from the 70s, and some a little bit more modern, just because the cities have always been populated and still pretty densely populated, or at least get a lot of foot traffic from downtown business and commuters. But I'd say the vast majority, probably mid-20th century.
And this was, I know from seeing many of the pictures in the book, a lot of times businesses used it as the sign on their building. They painted their sign on the building, right?
Correct, yeah. So a lot of times, instead of building an actual physical sign, or, you know, now it's really popular to have your sign kind of hanging over the sidewalk, they would just use the space available on the building, you know, make it very prominently right there.
Well, I have found it quite interesting as I went through Fading Ads of Cincinnati to recognize some companies that are still in business and many that aren't. And I imagine this was quite a detective trip that you got to go on many times, tracking what the history of these ads were.
Yeah, it's really, really, really tough at times because some of these companies, you know, existed for a very short period or existed just before, you know, really good records were kept. There's one over in O'Brienville that's from the early 20s. It's for an old dry cleaners. And the only mention of it I could find was on an old city directory from about the 1920s, 1925 era. And that's really all there is to it. So there's not much more of a story you can really find there. And then some of them, you know, closed down as recently as, like, you know, 2011. So there's newspaper articles on it. There's mentions of it. You got Better Business Bureau records. But some of them are still in business. The ones that aren't, though, especially the really old ones, it's really hard to find, like, first primary sources about them. I would post them on my website or on Facebook and just ask, like, oh, does anybody know anything about it? Sometimes you get personal accounts. A lot of it's hearsay. So it's not like when I would do research papers for college, you know, you find your sources, you read through them for a while, and you glean the best information from that. Some of this was, you'd go on a rabbit hole. You'd start typing something in, and it's just article after article, mention after mention, and you get so far down. I'd be up for all night sometimes looking at just one ad.
And then there were the ones you tried and got that number no longer is in service.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, there's quite a few. You'd call their number and it wouldn't be around anymore. I think there was one, the Apex Furniture ad over and over the Rhine, when you find a company that still had that ad on their website, a picture of it, and you'd call them, but it was a Canadian company. So I'm not sure if the number eventually got transferred or if the companies were related somehow, but it eventually went to like some insurance salesman. And he never called me back. And so just kind of a dead end. You don't really know where it goes from there. Like, I found out who had founded that company and the history behind it. But how it ended and when it ended, you know, kind of tough to pin down.
I'm speaking with Ronnie Salerno, author of Fading Ads of Cincinnati. You can learn more about the book and Ronnie's work at our website, wvxu.org. Ronnie will be at Joseph Beth Booksellers at the Rookwood Pavilion coming up on Wednesday, January 13th, 7 o'clock, discussing and signing the Fading Ads of Cincinnati. And this art on these, you know, some of them are just very plain signs, you know, block letters on a solid background. But Some of these are really works of art and fun to look at and realize that this is a lost craft.
Yeah, it, you know... Now I think with graphic designing, everybody who goes to school for it, you learn the digital side of it. So Adobe Photoshop, Adobe Illustrator, and you have to get the basics of art to it and kind of those concepts down before you can move to that. But back then, like Gus Holthaus, who's one of the oldest sign painters who painted a lot of the buildings around downtown, I mean, he's doing this all by hand. And one of the guys we spoke to, Mr. Carpenter, you know, he would sketch it all out, kind of go over it with a client, but you can't really see the finished product until he's painted it on the side. So these guys kind of had a mind for composition and craft and like what kind of colors were going to work just from their own experience and just from messing around and toying with it. So it definitely, it's very physical work. You're out there in the elements, you know, all around, all year round. And there's a couple people in Brooklyn who still use this as a business. There's still a couple companies around. You don't see it too much in places like Cincinnati or Pittsburgh, but Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, it's still kind of a niche thing. A lot of video game companies actually use it for advertising. Mm. But yeah, it's definitely kind of a lost art. These guys were, you know, not just graphic designers, but they're painters as well.
You mentioned Gus Holthaus, and I want to ask about him. But other, what are they called? Wall dogs, right?
Yeah.
So these painters are called wall dogs, and I thought that was a great term. Talk about wall dogs and why they're called wall dogs.
Yeah, so they're typically called wall dogs. And there's a couple different explanations from various people I talked to in the book as to why it's that, but the general reason agreed upon is because these guys are up there, you know, anywhere from 3 to 11 stories in the air, depending on what the building is, but they're attached to a tether to make sure they don't fall, kind of like a dog on a leash. So they're up there all day working. They kind of coined the term wall dogs. So Gus Holthaus, probably one of the more prominent ones in Cincinnati, he, the son of a German immigrant who was a painter, did all kinds of work around here. He actually started as a house painter and kind of moved to advertising around the Great Depression. And then his business still exists under his grandson today as Holthaus Lackner Signs. So they've gone from started with hand-painted signs in the early 20th century to now they do all the physical signage around the city. So Great American Ballpark, all the signage you see on the baseball stadium, that's all descendant of his company.
And he signed his work, too. I'm fairly certain I had noticed Gus's name on some of these signs as I've been driving around through the years. But, you know, you brought it home in the book, Fading Ads of Cincinnati, that, you know, that is an artist's signature on that.
Yeah, it sure is. Just like the way if somebody made a painting or a drawing, they'd sign in the bottom right corner. Gus had, I'd say, probably most of his advertisement signs. So whether you go to Northern Kentucky or downtown or some of the neighborhoods, you can still find his name everywhere. But instead of doing, like, you know, a script signature, it's just very plain, usually white or black letters, just bold right at the bottom, just Gus Holthaus right there. And so, I mean, I can think of, like, 6 right off the top of my head where you can have his. And any advertisement you look at in the city, just look at the bottom right or bottom left corner, you'll probably find his name. And there's a couple other people who did the same thing. They'd have their names on it as well, but Gus is definitely the most prominent one.
Yeah, I think I saw the one with Ed Gelke's name on it. Yeah. I've seen that signature before.
And his is a little bit older. There's a couple photos from the 1940s during the Farm Security Administration and the Office of War Information. They sent photographers all around the country just kind of document what's going on during the Depression, during World War II. And a lot of Ed's advertisements kind of show up in the background of some of these photos. And I think I've only been able to find one or two today that still have Ed's signature at the bottom. And unfortunately, you know, he's long since passed. But when you're looking at these photos from the 40s, you know, with the classic cars rolling down the street and Cincinnati prepping for, you know, the Second World War, a lot of times in the background, these big burlesque ads painted in the back and Ed Gelke's signature right at the bottom.
So do you consider that some of this tradition is continuing in Cincinnati with artworks and all their murals going up in the neighborhoods where there is this? I mean, granted, they're not advertising signs,
sure, yeah,
but kind of that same tradition.
Yeah, in a way, it carries that tradition on. And it'll be interesting to see because artworks, you know, since I think 2007 is when they got started. They've done some incredible work all over the city. And now there's so many murals on both sides of the river. Yeah, it's not advertising a product, but in a way, you know, they're still utilizing that space to get people's attention. And they've got some really great work. And it'll be interesting to see in the coming years, you know, as that fades away, do they touch it up? Do they leave some to kind of just, you know, fade to their own devices? You know, how will it look? And I think even if it does fade, it'll still be pretty cool because they'll have their own stories behind them. And it's neat to kind of utilize that urban space. It's kind of like an art gallery built into the fabric of downtown. So they've done some really cool work.
Fading Ads of Cincinnati, the book by Ronnie Salerno that has lots of stories and plenty of pictures, too, of these ghost signs around the Queen City. You can learn more about the book at WVXU.org. Ronnie will be at Joseph Beth Bookseller Wednesday at 7 o'clock for discussing and signing of Fading Ads of Cincinnati. And you know, I've seen some of these, the Paramount Vodka. I've seen the Little Kings driving along Central Parkway. I've, you know, of course, seen Globe Furniture, and I've seen a number of them. I don't always pay attention. I feel after I've read your book, I pay more attention than a lot of people do. But how many of these ghost signs are there around here, both in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky?
It's tough to say. I think the book covers about 95 to 100 of them. But there's definitely more than that. And a lot of them, it's tough because they're kind of nondescript. So, you know, I'm sure Bill can attest to it, too. Once you start going around and looking for these, they kind of blend into the background. But once you're really looking for them, you kind of get an eye for them. And then there's times where you'll look up on the side of the building, you'll see the remnants of a letter or the remnants of a few words. But there's not anywhere near enough information to glean what was once there. Even if you look at historical photos, you might catch the building at the wrong time. Some of them fade a lot faster. And even since the book's been written, a few have been covered up and a few have actually been knocked down. Mm-hmm. So it kind of ebbs and flows all the time. They're definitely dwindling more than they're growing or new ones are coming in. But I'd say there's anywhere from about 100 to 150 that you can prominently see and still make something out of, at least a few words, even if you can't get the full message left.
Well, in a portion of the book, you talk about wandering around with Bill Reinhardt, yeah, a colleague here at WVXU, and he coined a term which I thought was really resonated, invisible.
Yeah.
They're there, but they're invisible.
Yeah, so he and I have been talking for a while about, you know, just different techniques for finding them and why we both liked them. And then we were sitting down to have dinner, and we actually went out and looked for a few ourselves. And, yeah, he says the term invisible. Essentially, you know, they're right there out in the open, but they're not really noticeable. So you might catch them here or there like you did on your walks to and from work. But until you really look for them, you can't really truly appreciate, like, their full value and exactly what they're showing. So, you know, they're in the public view, but they're not really prominent. So I think that's where invisible comes from.
And I find it interesting, as well as I look at some of these, you know, the ones I've both seen and the ones that are depicted in your book, and they each have their own appeal. You know, some of them, you know, I talked about being artistic expressions. They are,
yeah,
you know, pretty neat to see a 3-story tall vodka bottle, you know,
yeah,
depicted
for
nicely.
Sure.
But some of them are simple scripts, and even in their words, you know, they carry character. You know, a lot of character. What attracts you to these ghost signs the most?
Well, you know, at first it was just kind of, they were just cool. It's just something no one was really paying attention to. And my website for years is kind of focused on abandoned buildings or historical things, things people might know about, but really didn't know the full details of. And I think now, after having photographed them and researched them, because at first, you know, I really wasn't sure what to do with the book. Do I just take a bunch of pictures and say what they are? But a lot of them, you know, some of them have pretty quick, easy stories. You know, this was a furniture company in the mid-90s. They got bought out. They're gone. But a lot of them have really, really interesting stories behind them. And I think that's what I find most appealing, is that there can be something so simple, just painted on a wall, kind of ignored by everybody, fading away. Every day it gets a little bit worse and worse. Every year it's closer to being gone. But it can have someone's whole history behind them. Like the Solway's ad, mm-hmm, that's in there. Carl Solway, who owns the prominent art gallery downtown, you know, he's the descendant of the guy who founded Solway's Furniture. And getting to speak with him, you know, he's bringing up all these great memories of his father and the business he had, the business he eventually took over. And it kind of shaped, you know, that whole story kind of shaped who he was and who he's become now. And he still works in the Over the Rhine neighborhood, and he's just a few blocks from that old Solway's Furniture ad. But if you just stop to look at the ad and take a quick picture of it, you know, you don't really know that whole history behind it. You kind of have to delve in. And I think that's what makes them special to me, is there can be so much behind them.
There's a lot of history right there in front of our eyes if we only look for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Well, thanks for bringing some to light. And I'm delighted to have a little bit of a roadmap to go and seek some of these that I haven't seen out, Ronnie. So thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you so much for having me.
Ronnie Salerno. His book is Fading Ads of Cincinnati, with pictures and stories behind the ghost signs of the Queen City. Learn more at WVXU.org. Again, Ronnie will be at Joseph F. Booksellers Wednesday at 7 o'clock discussing and signing the Fading Ads of Cincinnati. You can find out more about that appearance on our website as well. This is the Book Club at 91.7.